Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
It's time for Must Have CTV, the podcast dedicated to the sitcoms of the 20th century. From I Love Lucy to News Radio, I'm your TV guy, Brett White. I'm also reporter, producer for Decider.com, and this week I am joined by returning guest, Megan Kay. Hello, Megan!
Yay! Hello! What's up?
Yes! We are back in a different apartment this time.
It's a much nicer apartment.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
physically spatially.
Nicer. Ooh, guys, there's another podcast I want to do about
New York real estate law.
About the drama going on in my life that is not sitcom related, but honestly, like, I could turn into one. No, this is like a serial level podcast crime expose.
This could very well end with someone getting arrested at
yeah,
the end.
Yeah, it's great. But yeah, last time you were on, we talked about the Munsters.
And
Munsters playing baseball.
Playing baseball both super well but also super badly, and
yeah,
mostly just walking away at the end of it being like, Lily.
Yeah, that's the thing. I think the most positive thing we had to say about the Munsters was like graphic design and title sequence. Mwah.
Aesthetics were on point. Aesthetics were on point.
Yeah, I think it was maybe not a good or the best episode. I should give Munsters another go.
We should give them another chance.
Yeah.
They deserve another chance.
Cause I'm ride or die Adams Family, like obviously, because I have multiple Adams Family things in my office right now. Nary a Munster thing in sight.
No, and honestly, if you were going to do this again, you'd probably need a Munster's ride or die because
yeah.
I basically wish I was Morticia.
Yeah,
like
so. But we're not talking about Munsters because this week we're actually traveling to May 20th, 1998. Deep Impact ruled the box office. My All by Mariah Carey topped the charts, which is a song I don't remember. And ABC aired the Dharma and Greg episode, Invasion of the Buddy Snatcher. Megan, you must have seen Invasion of the Buddy Snatcher before today.
Surely, no.
Oh, wow.
I have, though, seen...
What's your Dharma and Greg cred? What's your history?
I do remember watching a couple episodes when it first came out, because my parents were both like, well, we really only have 5 channels, so let's see what's on this one.
Yeah.
And I just remember it in the context of, like, I literally can't walk away with anything other than, like, in, like, that one Family Guy joke where they're like, what's Dharma and Greg? And she's standing on a table and he's like, Dharma, get down from there. And she's
that
like,
is...
you come up.
That is also... So I 100% watched this episode when it aired. I remember jokes watching it. I have obviously not thought about this episode in 21 years to the day. Like,
fair.
You know, but
other things have happened.
Yeah, but I remember watching the Dharma Greg pilot. I think I might have been a ride or die Dharma and Greg fan. I definitely watched the first 2, maybe 3 seasons of 5. And I definitely watched this one. I don't know why. Well, no, like, I loved this show. I thought it was hilarious. As a 1998, I was almost 14. So, cool 14-year-old I was.
But to speak in the language of your people, bless your heart.
Yep, oh boy. No wonder I was... No, May 20th, 98, I almost had friends. I was very close to having friends. I was going to have friends in a couple months. Didn't then. Because that's eighth grade. Right? Yeah, yeah. So, but yeah, I definitely saw this episode. I definitely watched it every week. Also because this was, and we'll get to this at the end of the episode, but this was part of a, like, killer ABC Wednesday night lineup. But this week on Must Have Seen TV, we'll be talking about the Dharma and Greg episode, Invasion of the Buddy Snatcher. It is the 23rd episode of Season 1, the season finale, and was written by Susanna Hardaway and Charles Harper Yates, and directed by Gail Mancuso. Here's how Hulu describes the episode. Dharma engenders Greg's discomfort when she befriends his poker buddies. Megan, how accurate is that description?
I think it's probably written very intentionally. I feel like they're really leaning on that word engender.
Yeah, that's like, a weird...
Because that really felt like a lot of what this episode revolved around.
Oh, yeah, very gender-roly. I wonder if it was that clever, or if it was like the Hulu, like whoever wrote this, was like, the word of the day is engender. Or like, I gotta make this interesting for me.
Thesaurus.com, yeah, what out. Is?
Yeah. So the episode starts with one of the most weirdly erotic things I've probably ever seen covering this podcast.
Probably.
Like, in terms of like a pre-YouTube 2000 sitcom, the beginning is Greg and Dharma just sitting on the couch, and Greg already, is he holding the lipstick already? He's like, I don't know, Dharma, I don't want to put lipstick on you. Like, he's very incredulous right away.
I feel like she's holding the lipstick. Okay. And he's the one who eventually, like,
yeah,
takes on the burden of lipstick.
Because she wants him to put lipstick on her.
Which is not even crazy now because of, like, all of, like, the makeup YouTube videos of, like, boyfriend yeah, yeah, puts on girlfriend's makeup, yeah, and does a hilariously disastrous job.
Yeah, but this is, like, so she, like, he's like, oh, okay, and he takes, and then he, like, oh, it's red. Like, it's very, like, what? And then she, like, he's like,
well, I guess, pucker up.
No, I don't pucker up. In fact, my mouth has to be open.
And she does, she references it's what the French guys do.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Which I picked up, and I was like, what? And Greg internalizes that very intensely, where he's just like, French guys.
Yeah, oh, yeah, boo. So, but then she's like, do the top first, and then, like, now do the bottom. Like, it's...
Now do the bottom.
And it's like, and then, while he's putting the lipstick on her, he goes, like, Dharma, all of the blood in my body is left my head. Or it's, like, not in my head anymore. Because that he has an erection, like, and then he lunges, he pounces.
Clearly.
Like.
But also he does a pretty good job putting on her lipstick, can I just say? Okay, like, I was really expecting there to be a joke played where he just fucks it up.
Yeah.
And, like.
No, wow, yeah.
He did a solid job.
That would have deflated the sexual tension. If it had been, like, if he had, like, gone up, if he had done, like, the Little Caesars lady in the plain bathroom. That's a very old commercial I just referenced. But no, like, they play it for, like, hot. Like, it's...
They play it to be hot.
And then it just goes to the opening credits. And it is... I'm trying to think of other possibly sexy moments I've had in this pod. Like, Gomez kissing Marticia's clothed arm. Like, that's not, like, that hot. I mean, it's hot, but it's not that hot.
Their kind of sexual tension is entirely different from what we see here, where, like, all of theirs is played in, like, subtext and nuance and, like,
yeah,
vigor. His was just like, I'ma smash your mouth.
Yeah, he's like,
I'ma talk about my dick.
Yeah, it's like, okay, it should be pointed out, this is a Chuck Lorre sitcom. This is what he did between Roseanne and, I guess, 2 and a Half Men. So, it's really, because Chuck Lorre in the 21st century with 2 and a Half Men and Big Bang Theory has developed a brand of, like, critics hate him, your parents love him, like that, like, middle, it's kind of gotten polarized in a way. But, like, Dharma and Greg, it's weird, I don't think of him doing Dharma and Greg. It doesn't seem as, bro-y and lewd, even though it kind of is.
It definitely is, but and I'm sure probably when it's played, you're kind of supposed to be empathizing with the wrong people. Because, like, when I watch this episode, like, I walk away with it thinking, Greg was clearly, like, the douchebag in all of this.
Yeah, Dharma's great.
But, like, maybe, like, is it meant to be kind of where you watch it and you're kind of like, oh, well, yeah, I mean, Greg is justified in his discomfort.
Oh,
like,
I wonder, yeah.
But we look at him, we're like,
no, Dharma's,
go Dharma!
Dharma's the normal one. And also just for people who've never watched the show before, Dharma is Jenna Elfman. Delightful, like, manic pixie dream girl, like, Genesis, almost.
Very.
High up in Scientology. Uber Scientologist. So, questionable on that air, on that end. And Greg is Thomas Gibson from, was he NCIS or Numbers or...
I don't know who people are in things.
He was on one of those CBS procedurals for like 15 years, but then he was just fired last year for anger management issues.
Honestly, you could kind of see some of that coming through.
Yeah, so, you know, we're dealing with someone who has anger management issues and a Scientologist.
How will these two kids make it work?
That's the show. That is the show. Man, what if Sea Org comes after me because I trash talk? I would honestly welcome the publicity. So anyway, that's what we're dealing with. The opening credits. That was really a tangent. The opening credits are the most 1998 thing you could ever see.
Oh my god. Literally, all it needed to be more 1998 was like the S that you drew in all of your notebooks.
Yeah.
To be more 1998.
Like someone playing like a MASH game or whatever.
like fuck. Oh my
it god. Was, because it's the two of them in front of what looks like a Sears studio portrait backdrop in a way. Mm-hmm. And bubbles are floating around them. The two of them are basically like holding each other, spinning, being goofy.
Yes, and she's also doing this very like... questionable white woman doing a dance that is kind of meant to be like, I'm doing this like Eastern inspired.
Oh, yeah, she also like sitting like cross-legged. She's like meditating, and is he reading a paper? In my head, I feel like he's
right.
Like, and then like the end of it is like there's like yin yang.
Yeah, they try very hard to like reinforce this like Eastern philosophy.
Yeah,
because
that's what
like,
she is. It's weird. And then the font is this like. Bubble letter, 3D rendered, like, it's very, it looks like a commercial for, like, Claire's. Like, it is something. And it's also, that's very much the show. So the episode is a poker episode. It's nominally, it's like peripherally a poker episode. Because every sitcom has to have a poker episode. It opens up with Greg and all of his poker buddies doing their poker thing, talking about their, like, you know... What news anchor do you want to see strip or no lap dance?
Yeah.
And like very, what I think is really fun about this scene is that Dharma and her friend Jane are on the steps watching them
eating popcorn and also like having their own kind of hot take on these like questions that they're firing out.
I love, oh yeah, because when they're like,
which network anchor woman would do the best lap dance? Maria Shriver. See, that's where I would have gone, but apparently fear of Arnold runs pretty high.
It's really funny. Dharma even calls out like, hey, best baseball player to be in drag, like Ken Griffey Jr.
They don't miss a beat. It's really actually kind of fun.
Oh, and I love the joke of when a guy walks in, Dharma's like, that's the guy that's been in poker for 2 years and none of them know his name. And then they're all like, hey, Captain!
It is its own spectator sport. And
none
of them then, all of them address him, and no one addresses him by name.
Yeah, it's really funny. I really love...
Which I related to, honestly, quite a lot. Because how many times have I, like, ran into someone and been like, hey,
what's the
guy?
But I really love the dynamic between Dharma and Jane. I remember as a kid thinking that Jane was, like, the star of the show. Like, I thought she was hilarious. Because she's such just, like, a... creepo, like a great, delightful creepo.
I am obsessed with her, like, circle of friends after this episode.
Oh, yeah. Where's that show?
Yeah.
It honestly kind of looks like a Batman Rogues Gallery when you get to it.
It honestly looks like me hanging out with my friends in my friend's basement in the small-ass town I grew up in Podunksville, fucking Illinois.
I'm glad we did this episode because we do get to see so much of Jane's life and it's pretty rad. So when one of Greg's friends come over and asks Dharma for Tylenol, or like, you know, he has a headache, what do you have? She's like, well, what, you know, something, like, there's like a root that gets to your, like, what's the root of your headaches? Like, what? And then he starts opening up, and...
And there's so much going on. And it's funny because it actually kind of starts as, like, a demonstration where she's, like, kind of talking. She was, like, talking to Jane and she's like, here, watch this.
Yeah.
And, like, starts by being like, who's your favorite stooge? And, yeah. like, has a very, like, bro-y moment.
Oh, yeah. She, like, they high five.
Right. And then they start getting in. Like, that was kind of, like, the thing that kind of made him amenable.
Yeah.
To.
It was, like, her cred. She's like, hey, I can hang.
Yeah.
I can be a bro.
Right. Which is its own, like, thing. Of, like, Dharma still has to prove that she can bro in order to, like,
yeah, she's speak, worth not just being, but, like, the wife who brings the snacks or whatever.
Right. But, yeah, I know. He really, like, digs into, like,
yeah,
pretty quickly, frankly.
Like, oh, yeah.
He had some shit to say. He really needed to share.
I was actually wondering if we were going down a, like, Dharma doesn't believe in Tylenol joke. Because I could honestly see that, like, I don't believe in putting chemicals in your body. But it's like, as someone that gets migraines kind of often, I'm like, give me whatever.
Pharmaceuticals can be your friend.
Please. I can't eat red onions anymore. That hurts. So then, like, the next, like, we slow dissolve, and then we find out that, like, all of Greg's friends. It's like, Greg and Pete have not gone over there, but the rest of them are all, like, it's hangout time. It's group therapy time over in the corner. And they're all, like, just, Dharma's just, like, giving them all advice.
Yeah, and there's even, like, it's interesting because, like, they escalate it pretty quickly. I think we get, like, one, like, popover point where we also introduce the ducks.
Oh, the ducks, yeah, like, the pool. This happens, and then we find out that, like, Jane, we're like, oh, where's Jane? She's playing Go Fish with Pete and Greg, and Greg hates Go Fish. And then we cut to the B-plot that is so tiny. Like, it's, like, just, which is Greg's parents have ducks in their pool.
Protected species ducks, so they can't just, like, get rid of them.
Yeah, they can't, like, wipe them out. I love Greg's parents, Kitty and Edward. Like, Kitty is this proto-Lucille Bluth, and I really kind of, like, it's a shame that she, like, when Dharma and Greg was on, we were all about AOL chat rooms, like, we couldn't make GIFs, like, you know. She missed it, and I was like, oh, like, Kitty Montgomery is so close to being, like, iconic.
A great gif.
But Lucille Bluth is, Jessica Walter is a treasure, so, you know, you can't replace her at all. But Kitty is really good. But what does get them out of the pool, what does get the ducks out of the pool is Dharma doing a cannonball into the pool, and they all fly away. Kitty has this really great line of...
Wow, they come right back.
I know, I know. I had the maid jump in and out of the pool all day yesterday. Didn't do a thing.
So then we get... I thought this was going to be a plot, but it wasn't. But Dharma gets out. She puts on a cover-up so she can take off her bikini underneath the cover-up.
And, like, this is obviously an opportunity just for, like, the showrunners to be like, Dharma's free spirit basically means we get Jenna Elfman naked on set. Like, she was just, like, she had her cover-up on, and so she just starts, like, whipping off her bikini. And, like, the whole joke that's played there is, one, the dad is just, like, completely... Because, first off, like, they don't, like, cut away. Like, you see...
No, it's a one-shot.
You see everything but Jenna Elfman's nip, and you can find that on your own if you want.
Yeah.
But...
It is there. Like, it is very, and, like, it's weird. I honestly thought we were going to get, like, a plot of just Dharma's, or Greg's dad thinks Dharma's hot. Greg's dad then has a dream about Dharma. Greg's, like, which is, like, creepy, obviously, but it's like, well, that's a B plot. Like, that's actually a thing you can do on this show, and it is instead just a gag. Because the B plot is the ducks.
Yeah.
It is so... I wonder if there was a point when the B-plot was actually Greg's dad has the hots for Dharma, and ABC was like, that's... Your show's already weird. You had a weird lipstick fetish thing at the top. Let's not do that. Like, okay, well, we have ducks.
You're going to carry the erectile dysfunction thread through the rest of the show.
Yeah. Jeez. So, that happens, and then there's... But while she's doing that is when she gets a phone call. Or no, a phone call comes... I guess, to the house, none of them have cell phones.
It was like a cell phone. It was like one of those, like, weird little... It was like a flippy phone of, like, very, like...
This is 1998, so this is... I didn't have a phone then. I got my first phone in, like, 2000, I think. It's a huge Nokia that had a Union Jack faceplate and the Star Wars theme as a ringtone.
Oh, on brand.
Yeah.
Hashtag on brand.
Yeah, I feel like I got that base plate of the Hot Topic. That makes sense. And it turns out that one of Greg's friends is having problems in the bedroom. A little bit impotent. Well, and that's immediate when we find out that also Edward, Greg's dad, is like, it'll go away, or comes and goes.
Listening raptly to the conversation as Dharma is consoling the friend. Also mentions taking him to, what was it, did she say take him to her herbalist?
Oh!
Like, I feel like she was like, I'll take you to my herbalist, and like...
So this is set in San Francisco. One of San Francisco's is, well, definitely... Herbalist is code for...
Like, they're going to Chinatown, like...
Like, weed dealer, or like...
No,
or like,
I thought she was taking it to, like, her... I just thought, just assumed, like, her weird, like, white lady Eastern philosophy thing.
Oh, that
is,
also,
like,
yeah.
I'm gonna take you to, like, go get some, like...
This is my...
Powder, grunt, like, whatever, from, like, my herbalist to, like,
get you...
If you wanna
know, my blind spots are definitely Eastern medicine and also drugs of any sort. So this is where I'm just like... I am a Greg... Oh, okay, like, okay. In my relationship, I am a Dharma, but in a different way. Like, I'm definitely a Dharma, but I am not, like, Eastern hippy-dippy. I'm just, like, weird.
I was gonna say, I can see, like, you both having opportunities to, like, flex a bit of Dharma-ness.
Which I think is how a healthy, like, relationship works.
You
have to have there is no, you know, this show paints a false dichotomy of, like, straight-laced dude. No, man, real relationships.
You flex.
You gotta ground each other.
Yeah.
Yeah.
At any given point, like... I am, well, actually, usually, I am also generally the one who is like, I'm doing lots of things with my arms right now, and I can't really explain why, but also feelings.
Yeah, it was, I feel all over the place.
Just all over the place.
It's just like misdirected feelings all over. And this is where Greg realizes Dharma is getting too close to his friends, she's up in their business, and he doesn't like it, because you gotta have... Like, the boxes, or... This is also a Seinfeld plot, and I feel like George has a term for it. No, worlds are colliding! This is the death of relationship, George! Mm. Yeah, because when Elaine becomes friends with Susan.
Which, like, part of this happens, though, because he's, like, in his office with his, like, super, like... Just, you are the whitest and of dudes, and just, yikes. And, like, because I feel like Greg at first was kind of like, yeah, it's whatever. She's helping my friends, it's fine. But then the guy is like...
Bad influence, Pete.
Bad influence, it's true, because it all goes downhill from there.
Yeah, so listeners, if you know Joel Murray, if you know what Pete looks like, you know what section of the podcast we're in now, which is where I talk about... Formative crush of my middle school years, Joel Murray Pete from Dharma and Greg.
I didn't realize this was a segment.
I mean, it basically is now. It basically is, because every episode. But that's like, I watched so many of these sitcoms when I was like a teenager, and I just was like, I don't know why I think he's cute. He's Bill Murray's youngest brother.
Okay.
Things I know now because I follow Joel Murray on Twitter is all the Murray brothers. All have a line of golf clothes.
Of course.
Because they're all, like, huge golfers, but it's called, like, William and Murray or something. I can't, has, like, a very, and it's, like, all, like, plaid pants and, like, polos.
Oh,
and God. And they make all these, like, promo videos of, like, all the bros, like, on the golf course listening to rock music. And it's really sweet, but also, I'm like, who knows? Also, he was on Mad Men. He was,
That's where I knew him from!
Freddie Rumson.
Damn.
Freddie Rumson.
Yes, that was it.
Sweet Freddie Rumson who peed his pants. He tried so hard. He got better. He got sober.
God bless.
He's honestly probably one of the only characters in Mad Men to have a arc that ends better than where it started, at least.
Yeah.
I mean, Peggy gets better, too. Dawn, I could do a whole Mad Men podcast. Poor Lane. So this is where, like, so one of Pete's main, like, crux of talking is...
See, you have an affair with Cindy Crawford.
I'm not going to have an affair with Cindy Crawford.
Yeah, no kidding. But say you did. Who are you going to tell? You can't tell your friends because now they're your wives.
Hey, guys.
Habeas corpus ex post facto.
Which, like, That's also a very 1998.
A super 1998 reference.
Very referenced. And I even feel like 98 might even be like waning years for Cindy Crawford.
Yeah. I feel like she was like early 90s.
She's early.
Right?
Like she had. So she tried to get into acting in that movie with one of the Baldwin brothers in like 95. It might have been called like Fair Game or something. Mm. And it was like bad. Like. Critically panned. Everyone was like, you're not a movie star. Like, this did not do well. No. And I feel like after that, it's kind of hard to... When you reach for the stars on that big of a public platform and you come up short, it's just hard.
Yeah, that's hard just kind of reinforcing people being like, maybe just stick to walking down a runway.
Yeah, please. I think that I also measure what supermodels were hot by who my very straight cousins had on their bedroom walls. And they definitely had Cindy Crawford in the early to mid-90s, but then it switched to Kathy Ireland very hard in, like, the mid-90s, and it was Kathy Ireland from there out.
I had a brand of her Kmart shoes.
See, I was going to say, she's now, like, I'm one of them getting that Kmart money still. I mean, yeah, she still has that going.
As long as there's a Kmart, which, like, but...
Oh, God. Everything's closing. So then Dharma comes in, and... When Greg, like, is Greg the one that asks her, like, hey, if I had an affair with Cindy Crawford, I could tell you, right? And then Dharma's like,
I would tell you!
Boom! Yeah.
Canon, the Dharma's bisexual.
Yeah, bisexual representation!
I'm here for it.
Do feel like the show definitely, like, I feel like that actually might be a plot point at some point. Because it doesn't, like, that seems very within the realm. This is post-Ellen. Ellen came out a year before. You can do shit like that.
Mm-hmm.
At least to the point of you can make jokes that make, like, Greg's mom uncomfortable. Like, you can do that level of representation.
America gets to, like, foil themselves through Greg's mom.
Yeah. So, so we go to... And I have at this point written down, is Dharma actually friends with them, or is she just their therapist? Because, like, the next thing we see is her at the restaurant with one of Greg's friends, and he's just unloading all these problems on her, and I'm like, it does... I know that for the purpose of the show, they're treating it like a friendship, but it's like, it seems very one-sided. Like, it's more like, these men need just someone to talk to. Like, I don't know how much Dharma is actually enjoying. I think she is, but it's not like she can also be like, let me tell you about my, you know, yoga class. It was such a hard pain, like...
Yeah, everything about her character is that she seems very empathetic and, like, she wants to kind of be that person. But, like, how many friendships have we been in where it's like, oh, you don't actually care about me as a person. You just need someone to unload on because you are deeply unhappy.
Yeah.
Okay. here are a bunch of therapists. Have a nice life.
Right. It is also weird that, like, all these men, I don't know if they ever come back, but, like, Pete and Greg are, like, buds. Like, they're co-workers, they're buds.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they have to... If you can't be emotionally intimate with someone that is that good of a friend of yours, Greg...
Like, literally, we saw, like, how close they got as friends. Like, in that office where he's just, like Dharma's friends with my friends, and he's like,
It's like, that's not a helpful thing.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, Jane and Dharma have such a cool friendship where I would watch a show of just the two of them. Like, peas in a pod, please. And then at the end of this, we find out the guy's name is Paul Bunyan, which is a really funny joke. Paul Bunyan. but then when the guy leaves that Greg, the Dharma's talking to, and Greg comes in, Dharma reveals...
What if Howard had too much to drink and hit on you?
Oh, believe me, Greg, that's not gonna happen.
Why not?
Because Howard's got a crush on you.
Which is another thing that I thought, that's the plot. No. It's just one of many. Like, it doesn't actually take over the episode like I was kind of hoping it would.
There were so many things threaded throughout this episode where I'm just like, when are we getting this spinoff where we resolve all of this?
Yeah, like, where is this impotence plotline going? Like, where is all... But no, it's just... So, because the next thing we see is the next poker game they have. And Greg is, like... Greg is basically turning into Jean Grey just discovering her powers kind of shit. Because, like, one of his friends is, like, betting too much. And he hears in his head Dharma saying, like... He just went bankrupt. And then... wait, what was it? What are the other ones?
The one just went bankrupt. The other was...
Can't remember what it said about the impotent guy.
Yeah, it was like everyone has impotence issues or something like that. And basically,
it's like then the gay one gets excited or like says something. Greg's like, "Don't get excited!" Like,
yeah, the whole thing is basically Greg being haunted by all of the things that Dharma has uncovered about his friends.
Yeah,
all of which are like important things that are relevant to them as people, but is apparently like haunting him and wrecking his ability to participate in his beloved poker game.
It is also so. This is a weird thing where like I do feel like I am close with like in high school. Every time my mom would ask me, "So like what's Nicole doing? What's April doing? Like how are their jobs going?" I would always be like, "I have no idea." And my mom, like, she would always say, "What do you guys talk about?" And in my head, I'm like, literally everything, apparently, except for, like, how is your job going? Like, they're, like, the basic fundamental, like, how's your financial stability? How's your relationship going? Like, those, like, kind of, like, bedrock things we would never talk about. But instead, it's just, like, I don't know, pop culture. But it always felt very deep. It was like, I feel like I know them, but do I not? I don't know. Like, you can talk for hours and I guess not talk about anything.
But a lot of it, too, I think, comes, like, with that level. You just kind of eventually you get to a point where, like, if something was wrong, you can say things.
Oh, yeah. That's the other thing is, like, I know when shit is definitely wrong with my, like, close friends. And we don't always have to be like, so, before we start, for fun stuff, what's the update? Parents?
Like, are your accounts in order?
Just, like, read through the minutes, and then you can get to, like, so did you watch, like, the latest episode of Selling Sunset on Netflix? Don't. It's garbage. But maybe it's interesting. I don't know. Definitely not going to do a Selling Sunset podcast, tell you that much. But that, Greg ends that scene by being like, okay, you know what? I'm out. Have all my chips. Looks him in the face. Paul Bunyan? Which I thought was really funny. Really good, like, button on that joke.
It was, yeah, it was actually, he kind of managed to, like, get through everyone's issues and then ended right on Paul.
Yeah. And I wish there had been, like, a thing of, like, oh, Paul, right. But they didn't do that. So then we cut back to the duck plot, and now Dharma's parents, Abby, and I can't remember her dad's name, are there. And very long ponytail man. So Abby studied bird brains in college. So very funny. So she's there to, like, get the ducks out. She has a duck call. It's very quick. Like, there's not really much, like, that scene happens. And then we're back to the original.
This is also, I think, too, where the dad gets really invested in his, like, moral integrity of, like,
can I get you something, Mr. Finkelstein?
Whoa, Celia. Sorry. No, you don't have to wait on me. I cannot endorse by my actions any system that places one human being in servitude to another.
I just made a pitcher of strawberry margaritas.
Well, if they're already made.
He's like, shrug, and it takes his shoulders up past his ears almost. And he's like,
the most sitcom shrug I've ever seen in my life.
It makes me realize how much fun it must be an actor to be on these kind of shows. Because you can just go for that, and
chew.
It's just like,
chew on it.
You just go for it. Who cares? It's so much fun. Ugh, I love it. This is where... So then Dharma's, like, going to see one of Greg's poker buddies has, like, an art showing. And Dharma's like, yeah, so there's some charcoal paintings of you at the gym. Which, also, okay.
This is the part
that's
where I believe...
That's a big swing.
Yes.
Because I'm like, this poor gay guy. He has drawn charcoal etchings of his friend at the gym and is displaying them on a show that do you think he's invited Greg to come or is... No, probably not. They're probably not that close. Because in my head, I was thinking, if he invited Greg to this might have been his plan of, like, I'm telling him tonight. He's going to come. He's going to see these charcoal drawings. He's going to finally know. But since they don't even talk about literally anything, he definitely never told them about charcoal drawings. He never invited them anywhere. Dharma only knows this because she's his therapist now.
But at the same time, so first of all, like, this is where, like, Greg's toxic masculinity spiral, where, like, it has kind of been a gradual down decline, and this is where it really kind of starts to hit the lows. But also, can we also just unpack the fact that he has observed Greg at the gym enough to make charcoal drawings?
That's also wild.
These don't I mean, not having a, I haven't done anything with charcoal since high school, but at least it takes like an hour to get like this down.
That's
like,
hard.
That is a lot.
I guess if you spend all your time not talking about your feelings under any circumstances to anyone, it comes out in the form of charcoal.
But like, also, was Greg just like working out and like know, being like, hey, Howard, what you doing over there,
was
buddy?
It all from memory, I wonder. Or like, is he taking photos in the locker room? I mean, honestly, all the scenarios are very sad and very creepy. So basically, Greg is like, I'm going to get back at Dharma and be like, no, actually, I was going to hang out with Jane tonight. And Dharma's like, oh, great, cool, well, I hope you guys have fun, bye. And then we get, I think maybe what got the biggest laugh of me of the entire episode is Greg immediately grabs their bright orange phone, calls Pete.
Speak to me.
Pete, it's Greg.
Hey, what's up?
Well, your brilliant plan backfired. Now I actually have to hang out with Freaky Jane, or Dharma's gonna find out.
I'm not in. Leave a message, and then get out of the gene pool, you idiot.
I miss dumb answering machine jokes. Like, this was just the kind of joke that was done all the time. On every show. From the invention of answering machines on, everyone, the kooky asshole character in any cast always had that message. And it was funny every time.
Which, like, literally has carried through, like, Archer.
Oh, really?
Like, yeah. That's a whole gag in Archer. God. His, like, shitty psych voicemail message thing.
And so then we go to Jane's apartment, which we touched upon earlier, but, like, we gotta... So Jane's apartment has... It's just, like, it's honestly like a club that Stefan would describe. It's like, Jane's apartment has everything.
This is the hottest place in New York.
It's the hottest building. The hottest apartment in Dharma's building is Jane's apartment. It's got a biker lesbian, a folk singer on an electric guitar.
Maybe a Norwegian vampire.
Yeah, an 8-foot-tall Norwegian vampire. Dick Clark. Like, literally Dick Clark.
Dick Clark will lick your face.
Yeah. A Vulcan is also there. Like, the entire club is decked out like the Florida Everglades. Because there
Maybe
are, like,
there
little...
are no windows, but they're definitely on, an upper floor.
Yeah, it is great. And so, like, there's a couple Jane is making out with the Vulcan, the, like, folk singer with... She has, like, a severe, like, dark bob, like, it's like a black bob, like,
it's
bang.
It's a very 90s,
yeah,
like, it's punky
like a,
bob.
Yeah, you know, like, a black turtleneck is she wearing, like, she's singing, everyone's making out, or, like, groove, dancing very awkwardly, then Greg opens the door, and then Jane immediately introduces him as a cop, which I also remember that joke immediately. I also remember the singer immediately starting to sing a song about how he's a cop.
Scared cop. I'm a cop and Satan. Scared cop. Little tasseled mama's boy. Scared cop.
Hey, hey, hey.
Hey, 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 hey.
I remember all of those jokes. Wild.
She had a very, like, cool girl 90s singer voice.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
I wonder if she was somewhat, like, if she was, like, a producer or songwriter, like, she definitely did some coffee house gigs.
Yeah.
I honestly thought this was a coffee house set at first, and then I realized, no, this is Jane's apartment. Like, she lives here 24/7. And then Greg's like, well, I don't really want to play the game, so I'll just be the witness, or I'll just, like, watch. Or like, you're going to be the watcher. No one's ever volunteered to be the watcher before. And then it's got an old lady. She's like, no one's ever volunteered before.
Yeah.
And... the watcher, everyone licks his face.
No one ever actually explains what the game is. It all just becomes, let's lick Greg's face. Which he's super cool about, doesn't freak out.
Not at all. He's totally fine. He's like, I am willing to go on this ride. He's not. He tries to run out, but he opens the door and Dick Clark is there. And it's a very Twilight Zone-y moment where,
it really is.
Hi, I'm Dick Clark.
Oh, hi. Listen, you don't want to come in here. It's just, don't come in here.
You must be the watcher.
Huh? Just these wide eyes and just this big, like, grin. Like, he could have been licking his face or just, like, eating eyeballs.
Yeah. It's crazy to see Dick Clark. Like, I don't know. Right? So, I mean, I guess it's the season finale, so maybe they have budget or, like, pull out some stops, call some favors. I guess Dick Clark's New Year's Rockin' Eve airs on ABC, so there's a relationship there. maybe 25,000 Dollar Pyramid aired on ABC2. I don't actually know. It is weird that he was like cool with, yeah, I'll go almost lick Thomas Gibson's face.
It was probably in like Dick Clark's contract that year. You have to be like a special guest on all like of the one, ABC shows.
Maybe he was on everyone that night. Who knows? So then we cut back to the duck subplot, and Dharma's Greg is grilling or is barbecuing. And Dharma's mom asks, like, what are you, wait, that isn't what I think it is. And he's like, hey, if you smell grilling humans, you wouldn't stick around, would you? And pretty gross and weird. Funny.
Accurate? I mean, I would not hang around anywhere.
She's also wearing a scuba suit because she's going to, like, get in there and, I guess, like, talk to them face to face.
Yeah, Dharma's mom's approach to getting the ducks to move is the same way you would approach, like, family counseling, like human family counseling.
Yeah.
Let's all just hang out in the room together.
Yeah.
They're ducks.
They're ducks. What a weird plot line. You get this script this week and it's like, oh. Okay, well, I'm not in the A plot, but I have this. Okay, ducks. Cool.
Okay. A lot of ducks.
So then we get basically the resolution of the plot. The poker scene is like they're all hanging out at this bar. Dharma's with all of Greg's friends. He shows up. Basically, it's like a group therapy session, and like all the guys are complaining of like, we want to turn the poker into like a discussion group, but Greg keeps like poo-pooing it.
They have all acknowledged that like Greg doesn't fit in with like the new paradigm.
They've all self-actualized, and it's like really nice. They're all like really good,
legitimately happy. Like they're embracing one another.
Pete shows up. Also, I read it, like, and when they do the group hug, Greg looks over at the group. All of them are hugging, except Pete, who's, like, looking back at him, very afraid. And I was just like, aw, poor baby, you're kind of a bad bro, but
get
adorable.
Get that dose of toxic masculinity.
Yeah.
Probably not a phrase I've used enough on this podcast, frankly, because this show was rife with it.
Yeah, it's kind of the jam.
It really was.
So the episode ends, well, no, there are the two closing scenes of the episode. The first one resolving the poker thing is Greg comes back to the apartment and Dharma has puts it, because Greg realizes, like, he tells Dharma, like,
That's how you ruined it. Once a week I like to sit down with guys I don't really know and talk about things I don't really care about.
You like it that way?
Yes. Do you know how long it took to find 5 insensitive guys in California? We had to bring Stuart in from Chicago.
And on one hand, like, oh, okay, like, if, okay, that, I understand that, but also in my head, it's like, I could never want that. That has no appeal to me. I don't understand why someone would be appealing. Because he definitely has that relationship with people he works with, right?
I mean, it seems like it.
Isn't that what a job is? Is going and being, like, in some cases, it's like going and being with people that you don't know that well, and you don't, I mean, not my job. We actually all, like, hang out outside of work sometimes. But I think that's a fluke. Like, I think everyone else on my floor at work definitely has that relationship where it's like, I don't really know these people. We just talk about things I don't care about.
Right. And I think if you get into, like, a big enough workplace also, like, you're never going to know everyone you work with.
Yeah.
Like, so it's always just kind of like you see people that you acknowledge and you're like, hello, fellow human.
This one thing I know we both like, let's talk about the Mets for a hot second.
Did you catch Game of Thrones?
Woo, we can all talk about that, except me, because I've never seen it. And so it's weird that he also wants that outside of work as well. But you know what? For the plot of an episode, sure.
What is interesting, though, is that this denouement actually finally comes in him telling Dharma how he feels.
Oh, yeah. It's actually him opening up and doing what she's wanted all along.
And he has a positive, like, something positive happens out
of
that.
Yeah.
Like, she actually is, like,
it's a good message. Oh, cool. So she then goes and finds him. So he comes back to the apartment, and she is populated with people he does not know. Which it's like, it's again, it's another Stefan sketch, because it's like, a guy, like, it's a monk, a mailman, a guy who looks like a giant Boy Scout, or like a scout leader, troop leader.
I would fucking hope he's a scout leader, because like, otherwise it's just like, oh, you have some delayed
some issues.
Oh, okay.
And then also, like, it looks like a grocery store clerk, and then just, like, a dude.
Truly people, like, literally off the street. Like, she clearly just, like, walks the block and was poker? Do you play poker? Do you play poker? Great.
And it's like, oh, good, like, cool. And they're all into it. And then the other plotline resolves with, So Dharma's parents are like, oh, you know, they're here to mate, but what if other animals moved in on their mating territory? Would that drive them away? And they're
like, would consider it a threat to their resources and probably go away.
Hell yeah, they do. So they fuck in the pool, at the pool,
and we find out that
Greg's dad
is a freak.
Peeping Tom, watching
just,
that.
But not even, like, peeping. Like,
he's just watching. No,
he's just, like, straight up watching. He's got a glass. He poured himself a drink observe this, free love
session. Kitty walks up and is like, oh, what are you watching? Oh, my God! And that's the end of the episode.
She freaks the fuck out, runs away. He remains...
yet to watch.
Staring.
So I will say, glass-eyed. This show... So before this, a couple episodes before this, there was an episode which I think is a hilarious, hilarious premise. The week that the series finale of Seinfeld aired, Dharma and Greg aired an episode where, so Jane and Dharma have a contest to see who can fuck in the most public or, like, weirdest place. And at the beginning of the episode, Jane, I can't remember where she fucks, but she wins, like, I think it's like a duck statue. Whoa. Was it a duck statue? Because if so, then that is some circular whatever. So Dharma's like, we have to get the statue back. Me and Greg have been fucking in boring places. And so, because they know everyone's going to be indoors watching the Seinfeld finale, their whole plan is, like, to go fuck on the steps of City Hall, I think. It's definitely in public, and it might be in City Hall. So the entire episode is built around them having sex in public, and when they get to the steps of City Hall, they, like, hide, like, Greg's parents show up, Dharma and Greg, like, hide, and then Dharma, and then Greg's parents, I think it's Greg's parents, have sex next to them on the steps. In public, but no one's around because Seinfeld's over, or Seinfeld's airing. And so I'm like, this show loves public sex.
This show has a particularly, like, it's just very, like, sexual.
Yeah, it's a horny show, and everyone is having a good time.
Everyone's consenting adults here.
Yeah. And then in season 2, Jane and Pete hook up. Yeah, that happens.
Oh.
I think it's also because they realize, like, oh god, the premise of our show is, like, an oddball couple gets together, but then by season 2, it's like, well, they know each other.
Let's get an odder couple.
Yeah, it's like, well,
together.
They know each other now, we need to heighten.
Plus, I gotta plus this.
So you ready for some must-have facts?
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress. It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
The ratings for this episode. 11 million people watched this episode, which is like blockbuster for today's ratings. Very middling for them. It was ranked number 37 for the week, tied with Cosby. his 90s sitcom, not the original. So the top 5 shows of the week. Number 5 was a rerun of Seinfeld. A rerun of Seinfeld.
Wow.
4 was Murphy Brown. 3 was Frasier. 2 was Dateline. And number 1 was Frasier. They aired 2 episodes of Frasier that week, and they are both in the top 5. So, good on you, Frasier. Now, here is ABC's Wednesday night lineup that is pretty iconic in my memory. 8 p.m., Spin City. 8:30, Dharma and Greg. 9 o'clock, The Drew Carey Show. 9:30, Two Guys, A Girl in the Pizza Place.
Oh my god.
So, I mean, that Wednesday night lineup, I loved that lineup. I watched it every week. I don't think I ever watched Spin City, but I watched the other three. So, like, Ryan Reynolds to me is Two Guys, A Girl in the Pizza. Well, he's actually 15 on Nickelodeon, Ryan Reynolds, and then Two Guys, A Girl in the Pizza Place, Ryan Reynolds.
Wow, that's a deep cut Ryan Reynolds.
Yeah. It's streaming. It's his very first acting role ever was on a Canadian soap opera, a Canadian teen soap. Imagine Saved by the Bell, but air quote dramatic. And it's all, season one is streaming on Prime Video, and it stars Ryan Reynolds when he is, I think, 14.
Oh my god, that's like pre Degrassi.
Yeah. Oh, it actually, like,
it's like proto Degrassi.
So Degrassi, like, the original Degrassi aired from like 79 to 88, and then it was off the air, and then it came back. Like, 15 is what Canada did in between Degrassi's.
Oh my god.
Yeah, like, it literally ran for that. And I remember Nickelodeon got the rights to it, and they would air it, like, I think kind of like a little bit on a delay, and it had, the first time I ever learned what an alcoholic was because of that show, because one of the bullies becomes an alcoholic at the age of 15. So.
Oh god, every episode is a very special episode.
Yeah. Yeah. The first episode is Ryan Reynolds' parents are getting divorced. And also, it's a show about teens. There are no adults on the show. They are in a high school. The entire show takes place in a high school. There are no parents. I don't even think there's really a student body. And they spend a lot of time in the soda shop that's in the high school. It's wild. But Two Guys, A Girl in the Pizza Place also gave us Nathan Fillion, eventually.
It did.
Yeah.
I don't... Oh, yeah.
So, Dharma and Greg, like, it did okay this season, but it really peaked in the ratings in season 3. Like, that was the height of its popularity. And then it fell like a rock. And then was canceled by season 5. Mm. On IMDb, 73 users rated this episode a 7.9. Would you go higher or lower, or is that right on the money?
You know, I actually would... I might give it even like an 8.5. I would give it maybe a little higher.
Yeah.
Because I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Like, I really did. And
I would say, I would definitely say like an 8.3. Like, I think Dharma and Greg, that Family Guy joke might have done like lasting damage. Because I don't think people remember Dharma and Greg fondly. Also, that Family Guy joke seems very accurate. Like, I mean...
Yeah, it's... Yeah, like, a lot of that stuff. It's like, it's fairly accurate, but also, like, it's glossing over a lot.
Yeah.
I
guess also, when you name a show Dharma and Greg, like, it seems... is the most sitcom-y name for a... It makes it an easy punchline. Like, Dharma and Greg, because it just seems so frivolous mm-hmm. and, like, stupid. Mm-hmm. But...
The most, like, out there hippie name.
Yeah.
With, like, the most,
just bland, like I'm Greg.
Boring
Greg.
Yeah. Like, literally, his middle name could be Slacks.
Yeah. Greg Slacks Montgomery. Greg Slacks Montgomery. Scott Slim Summers.
Don't make him cool.
Yeah, that doesn't make... Slacks actually makes him way cooler.
Shit.
Damn. He's not cool enough for Slacks. He's, oh, wow. Trousers is a cool nickname. Pants is a pretty cool nickname.
Steamed shirt.
Yeah, okay, yeah, that's bad. Starched collar, which is also a joke in this episode. Who had the must-see performance?
I want to go to Howard. Poor Howard.
Oh, yeah. Poor guy. He's just trying to live his truth.
He is just trying to get by and,
I love that poker scene after we find out that he's gay and his shirt is unbuttoned, like, one button too much. And I thought that was going to be...
I didn't notice that.
No, but, like, because in the first, he's, like, wearing suspenders, he's, like, very buttoned up, but then the next one, he's like, hey, and, like, he's
Dharma's helping him live his
truth. Exactly, he's getting a little more comfortable. I will give it to Jane, I think, just because I love... She's such a scene stealer. It takes a lot to out-weird Dharma, who is supposed to be the weird character.
Yes.
And she does a good job. She's very much like the Jane to Dharma's Daria. Whoa.
Oh.
Is that? That can't be. That's not intentional.
No.
No. I mean, there's no way. Anyway.
No.
No, because Daria first appeared in Beavis and Butthead before this show came out. Mm. Jane is just a very common name. That's a coincidence. I'll do an hour-long documentary episode about this one thing. Must other people see this episode of television? Must they?
As much as you must do anything in your life, but I really think this was a really, like, good episode, and I really think, like, the point about, like, when you look at it with, like, your 2019 eyes compared to, like, your 1998 eyes, like, you really walk away with this being, like, she just, like, helped a bunch of, like, dudes who were really stuck in, like, these really straight-laced, stereotypical gender roles, like, really break out and, like, have some, like, encourage, like, healthy, positive expressions of, like,
find
their masculinity
friends.
And, like, come together as friends. Like, they wanted to stay together as friends. They wanted to continue to have these, like, breakthroughs and relationships.
Where's their spin-off?
Like, literally, like, you watch this and you're like, this is a really good, this is a surprisingly good example of, like, healthy male relationships.
And I do kind of wonder. I think that might be an accident.
I do think it is by accident.
But also, like, the point you made about, like, she also does help Greg. Like, he finally opens up to her and is like, if he had said that minute one, like, if instead of the whole, like, Cindy Crawford thing, if he'd been like, hey, like, I don't want to, like, you can be, you can be friends with him, just don't tell me. And he's like, tell you just because I wanted, like, I need to preserve this as well. Dharma would have been like, cool, awesome. I won't, like, tell you about all this stuff. Well, she's also, you know, patient client confidentiality, because she is their therapist. Like,
And then the whole episode would have just been about ducks.
Yeah. I would also say, people should definitely go back and watch that Seinfeld episode of this show. I think it's, like, a couple episodes before this one, of them fucking doing... There's also an episode that's called Dharma and Greg's Winter Olympics episode, which I guess aired during when ABC had the Winter Olympics, because it's all about all the men going and bobsledding and all the women going out and, I think trying to get Kitty laid or something, because, I don't know. There's also an ongoing plot line with Greg's parents getting split up, but they're obviously fine in this episode, so. Anyway. Hey! Do you want to read from the big book of sitcoms?
Oh my god.
Oh my, okay. I always forget to get this out. Okay. I'm gonna do something. Since I usually let people choose years and they always choose the same years, I'm just gonna go to the very beginning. And we're gonna talk about a sitcom, except that I should also probably tell you what this book even is. Have I read? What is this?
The beginning of the book.
I know, I'm just realizing I haven't read all of this part of the book. Anyway, the great TV sitcom book by Rick Mitz is a big textbook-sized book from 1982 that has little capsule-sized reviews and synopses of every single sitcom that's ever existed, in theory. Most of which only lasted one season, and every episode I like to go back and talk about one of these short-lived shows that we will literally never, ever, ever talk about on this show, because they've all been lost to time. So we are going to travel to 1949-1950 TV season.
I didn't even realize serialized TV was a thing.
Fucking wild. Like, this is pre-Little I Love Lucy. So, which one do you want to hear about? Apartment 3C, The Hartmans, Heavens to Betsy, The Life of Riley, Lum and Abner, or The Pinky Lee Show?
I'ma go, oh man, I was all Heavens to Betsy until you read Pinky Lee Show. Pinky Lee, like, Spots Bonanza, like, that's just, like, those are just words together that, like, sound great.
The Pinky Lee Show. So... I'm not gonna do it that voice.
That's actually, I was
5 years before he would charm the pants off of us after school on Saturday mornings, Pinky Lee tried to score in this sitcom. He tried again 2 years later with Those Two. This time, though, it was a semi-sitcom in which Lee, playing someone known as the Stagehand, worked in a vaudeville theater dressed in baggy clothes, ready, willing to fill in for singers and comics who couldn't make it. Also in the show, William Bakewell as the stage manager. The show was shot live from Hollywood and sent to the rest of the U.S. via kinescope. Incidentally, Pinky Lee's real name was Pincus Leff. He changed it for business purposes. Huh, the Pinky Lee Show, huh?
Leff.
Pincus Leff is a Star Wars character.
That
is... If it isn't yet, it is definitely like Admiral Leff. You came out of hyperspace too early. Like, That is what it is.
It's true.
Or, oh, Pincus! Fire for their, like, legs! So,
I don't Pincus, know. You can't hold them!
So, what is wild about this? So, one of the other old shows we talked about in the podcast was Life with Elizabeth, which was Betty White's sitcom. She was the first woman to ever executive produce her own sitcom in the 50s, because Betty White is the fucking queen of television. She has been going on since before the medium was invented. But in that show, it's like not a sitcom. It is a sketch show where every episode is like three different, like, 7-minute vignettes or whatever. And so it's interesting that, like, this one also said, like, it's a semi-sitcom where it seems more like Pinky Lee is playing a character who works at a vaudeville thing, and then he gets to perform for people that don't show up. So, there's not, like, a plot. It's like a heightened reality. It's like a bit.
Yeah, that sounds like a very, like, Mad TV type sketch show style where there is, like...
That's so weird. It's so weird going back and seeing, like, yeah, before I Love Lucy hit, like, people didn't know what to do with TV comedy.
No.
Yeah. Like, it's like, we have half hour, like, literally do anything.
Well, but I think, like, I mean, I think, like, describing it as, like, vaudeville. Yeah. But, like, okay, how do we get vaudeville, but on this giant box?
That we then, oh, and, like, also, like, Kinescope is also wild, because, like, Kinescope was, like, you would do TV live, and it would go out to, like, TV stations live and whatever coast you are, but if you wanted to show it again or preserve it, you had to literally set another camera up at a monitor to record the monitor. And that is how Kinescopes, like, come in. Like, that's how we have what little TV we still have from that era is because of that. And it wasn't until I Love Lucy invented shooting things on film and editing them together like a movie. Like, it's so... The Wild West of it is very fascinating to me. And it also just shows that, like, when you go back and watch I Love Lucy now, 60 years later, it still holds up. Like, it's wild how, like, yeah, they invented the forum, and, yeah, it works. Like, put them in a predicament, watch for a half hour. You're good.
The formula was... I mean, like...
It's that's a winner, baby.
No, but for real, like, it's the same shit as, like, science. Like, those basic fundamental equations, like... Just like calculating force, like, that shit doesn't go away. That's still mass times acceleration. But no, but this is, like, but with situations.
It's a shame that Pincus Left didn't, I don't know, maybe Pincus Left did some more stuff in the 50s. Maybe I should look up, I've never heard of Pinky Lee before.
No.
I've heard of Pinky Tuscadero.
I mean.
But that was, like, 25 years after this. 1949, wow.
Yeah.
So where can people talk to you online about Pincus Left? And Dharma and Greg.
Oh my goodness. Instagram is like generally
it's the safe haven.
It is my safe space. It's where a lot of just like free associating happens. So climb on board, at MKOK. MKAYEOK.
Hurrah! And that does it for this episode of Must Have Seen TV. Thanks again to my guest, Megan Kay, for dropping by and talking about Dharma and Greg with me. Next time, we will be kicking off Must Have Seen TV Pride Month, talking about the Cheers gay episode, The Boys in the Bar. The Boys in the Bar is in Season 1, Episode 16, and you can stream Cheers on Netflix, Hulu, Prime Video, and more. And I just want everyone to know that our guest next week is... I don't know, TV legend? I'll go legend. Dave Holmes. Dave Holmes will be on the podcast talking about Cheers, The Boys in the Bar. I'm excited. Now you're excited. Until then, I want to hear from all of you. Tweet your questions about sitcoms to Must Have Seen TV on Twitter. You can follow the podcast on Twitter and Instagram, Facebook and Tumblr at Must Have Seen TV. If you like what you've heard, rate and review the show in Apple Podcasts, and I'll read your review on the air. Follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Brett White. Read the words that I write at Decider.com. The theme song is Apollo Throwdown by The Go Team. Thanks, Acast, for hosting the podcast. Thanks to all y'all for listening. And I'll see you next time on Must Have Seen TV.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.